getting you healthy, happy, and doing what you love. You're listening to Tonic Podcast, the podcast of Dr. Tanya Winchester. Dr. Tanya is a licensed naturopathic doctor, acupuncturist, body talk practitioner, and edutainer with a passion for helping reduce pain and suffering and bringing more love, joy, and health into your life and into the world. The natural medicines and therapies mentioned in this podcast are not intended as medical advice or as a substitute for seeking medical attention. For more information about Dr. Tanya Winchester, visit Dr. Tanya, T-O-N-I-A, Winchester.com. This is Farah, and I'm delighted to be here with Dr. Tanya Winchester. Today's podcast is a continuation of mental health awareness and to celebrate Psychology Awareness Month this February. And our subject today is depression and anxiety and mental health in general, and specifically how thoughts and emotions contribute to mental illness or mental wellness.
Yes, absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about thoughts and their relationship to our health.
Right. So a thought is a piece of information that is created by our subconscious, typically. We're not usually aware of the thoughts that we're having. And they themselves can be a stress or a trigger, which then can lead to different biochemical changes in the body, which again could lead to some of these disease states. Thoughts are something that are commonly very easy to identify with. So if someone says, "I'm depressed," that identification is very sort of locked into who they are. You know, that mood piece is, it defines them. And so work that I sometimes will do with my patients when I can see that they're really challenged and stuck in a thought or an identity of, say, a disease state, I'm anxious, I have anxiety, is teach them to change that patterning. And this is possible because every time there is a stimulus, our nervous system responds to it. There's actually, you know, a microsecond delay in that space between the stimulus and the response that we can kind of interject and start to change how we're thinking and how we're talking to ourselves.
So it sounds like you're talking a little bit about the inner dialogue that may be happening. And can you give an example of a thought that has a harmful impact on our physical health?
I think even just that, saying "I'm depressed," would have that. It could be anything from "I'm not good enough," "people don't like me," "I'm too fat," "I'm ugly," "I am not good at fill in the blank," "I don't have any friends," "nobody loves me." These are probably things that you can relate to on some level, to some degree, that are just happening on automatic pilot. And just think about if your body at its age now was a little child, like, would you want to be saying those things to that little child? Of course not, right? So we're on automatic. We are giving these negative messages to our body very regularly, and I think it's disease promoting.
Mm-hmm. So the identification in terms of like "I am" as opposed to "right now I feel."
Yeah, or "right now I'm experiencing." Exactly. That's exactly something that we would look at changing the language of, but there's also a fairly easy to follow script which comes from, I've recently sort of been reintroduced to this idea through a coach named Jim Fortin. I'll put the link to the original podcast that I heard about this in the show notes for us. But the first step is to identify that you're in sort of a thought loop. The thoughts are very low on the grade of consciousness, essentially. They're just happening on automatic, and they kind of perpetuate other negative thoughts. Mm-hmm. And so the goal of this little script is to kind of rise above those thoughts and change them from the ground up, essentially.
So can you give us a little bit about a little sampling of that script?
Yeah, absolutely. So it would look something like this. Step one is to identify that you're in a thought loop or just kind of spinning out. And then the second step is to recognize that you're not actually your thoughts. That identity that you've really owned when it comes to those thoughts is not true. So you could say something like, I am not my thoughts. And then after you said that, because the thoughts are just again on automatic autoplay, you can say, my thoughts are not real, or my thoughts are an illusion. And then next, you could say, so you said you've identified, and then you're going to say, I am not my thoughts. My thoughts are not real. Next would be to say the only thing that is real is my ability to think. And this is where we start to separate that being on automatic to the consciousness and that awareness. So the only thing that's real is my ability to think. I am the thinker of my thoughts. I own my thoughts. They don't own me, you know? that's kind of the point of that piece. And then the next step is a conscious choice to direct your attention to something else. Positive. I'm going to choose to focus on, and you fill in the blank with whatever. You can look around your environment and see just what you're grateful for, even in your immediate space. Now, this isn't something that you do once and you're forever cured of that thought pattern. It does require consistency and repetition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so the script of I'm not my thoughts, I'm the thinker of my thoughts, I have choice to think the thoughts that I want to think, and then choosing what thought you want to take up, for example.
Exactly. So I choose to direct my attention to the fact that I ate a really good breakfast and I'm really proud of that. And I, you know, kept my commitment to myself to run around the block at lunchtime. And I'm really excited to see my dog when I come home from work. And I know that my husband has something special planned for blah, blah, blah. Like, you just start to change the things that you're focusing on. A different way of approaching this is derived out of work from Gay Hendricks. So he wrote a book called The Big Leap, and which is a marvelous book to help you improve how well your life is going. The idea in this book is that everybody has a sort of finite place of feeling good, and anytime we kind of break through that threshold, something has to bring us back down into sort of our comfort zone of So the book teaches you how to expand your capacity to feel good and have your life go well all the time. So he uses this example in The Big Leap of something similar. So again, step one is identifying. This typically would be for more worrisome thoughts like, how am I going to pay my bills? I don't have enough money. I'm so in debt. That kind of, so more worrying. And so again, identifying the fact that you're worrying. And then he suggests imagining that the worry is sort of like a big bowling ball and it just plunks out of you. To the ground. And then the third step is to ask the question, what new positive thing is trying to come into being? And so his rationale is that when we're worrying, it's us sort of sabotaging us feeling good. So the anxiety or the anxious patient could use this technique to reframe that maybe their worry is actually just burying something that's trying to come through that feels good. So then step four is, so the question is, what's the new positive thing that's trying to come into being? And then step four is you try to stick with that feeling. So maybe it's an inspiration about a piece of art that you want to make. You stay with that feeling for as long as possible. So you're expanding your tolerance of feeling good.
Mm-hmm. So this is very interesting. I've heard that the humans have an evolutionary bias towards negativity as a self-protection mechanism. So this would be working with neural pathways in a way of habituating the brain to happiness and well-being.
Absolutely. Yes. And picture a wooded trail that you, I use the example locally here in where we live is Westwood Lake. There's this very wide path that's probably as wide as a car around this lake, and it's about a 6-kilometer loop. And it's very well, it's not paved, but it's well worn. There's very little prickly bushes and things that are going to kind of poke you as you walk if you stay on the path. And these are sort of our ingrained habits and our ingrained thoughts. It's really wide, open, spacious path. And then you imagine the little deer trail kind of coming off of that up the hill. And if you take that little deer trail, you're going to get poked with all these sticks. You're going to probably get dew on you. You might step in like a hole that you didn't see. And it's more hazardous and it feels more uncomfortable. And this is what it's like when we're trying to introduce new behaviors or new thought patterns. We have to pave the pathway over and over again with that continuous, repetitious practice.
And it's not easy or comfortable.
No, but eventually it becomes that. And if you go back to our previous episode, we talked about the idea of starting and committing to something, and once you start to notice the benefit, then you get the motivation to continue, and I think that would apply here too.
So what's the timing for all this? Do you think there's a way that we can know when we're done, and are we ever really done in general?
I would say no. I like the expression, you evolve or die. I believe that we're constantly meant to be growing and expanding. So I wouldn't say that this is like a toaster that's popping up when your toast is ready to butter.
Mm-hmm. And in your experience, how long could it possibly take to pave these new neural pathways and change habitual thought patterns?
Right. So the old data used to say about 21 days. And I've actually seen everything from that to 88 days in length of time. Usually a 90-day window is a good place to start as a commitment to practice that behavior, to allow it to become into a habit.
And is it helpful to have anchor points, like an alarm bell that reminds you to think a thought, or some kind of bracelet that you wear to remember to think?
Yeah.
To choose your thoughts or something like that.
I think any time that we can bring more consciousness and awareness into those old patterns, the better. So if you can have something in your physical space that will trigger you to be like, oh yeah, now it's time to take inventory, take stock. Where are my thoughts right now? What was I thinking about? What could I be thinking about? What do I want to be thinking about?
And so we've been talking a lot about thoughts. What about emotions? Are there habitual emotions? And how are emotions and thoughts connected?
Yeah, and there's lots of different ways to define both of these things. I would say that an emotion is a label that we attempt to describe a set of physical symptoms. So we'll put a link to a blog post I wrote about this recently, but there's sensations in our body that happen when we have experiences. So it could be a feeling of expansiveness in your chest, and that might be a very positive experience, or it could be a furrowed brow and sort of squinty eyes, and that might be like an angry or kind of frustrated experience. Emotions, I think, are just labels that we try to explain those body sensations. The body mm-hmm. sensations should be our primary gauge about what we're deciding, I guess, in life. Thoughts are our brain's interpretation of either those body sensations or the interpretation of those emotions, again, those labels that we try to put on.
And is it possible to get in thought loops around certain emotions?
Yes, of course.
So can they kind of act like a vicious cycle in the sense
yep.
that we have a physical sensation and an emotion, and then there's a thought that overlays it?
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. And would it be the same way to get out of it in terms of using this script or bringing awareness into the languaging and the thought
yes.
that goes along with it?
Yes, and I think, so these two examples that I've talked about are really great, and then a third way to sort of bring yourself more back into your physical body would be to just, again, the first step is to recognize that you're in maybe a less than constructive thought pattern, and at that point, look around you and just take stock of what's around you in your environment. So just visually look and don't label like, oh, there's the water bottle, there's the window, there's the screen. Just just look at the shapes and the colors, and then close your eyes and just tune into what you're hearing. So what sounds are in your environment? You know, maybe there's a rustling of a tree if you're outside, or maybe there's some construction down the street, or maybe you hear, you know, a faucet dripping. And then you would tune into what you smell and use that information. Okay, maybe you smell some perfume, or maybe you smell an orange that someone just ate. And then lastly, just how does your skin feel? So what's the temperature, you know, of the air next to your skin? How do your clothes feel on your skin? So this is a way of just getting back into the body, being very present. And when we are in that present state of sensual awareness, using our senses, we're not worried, we're not anxious, we're not depressed, right? You know, they say depression is when we think about the past, and anxiety is when we think about the future. So this body awareness example is how we get back into the present moment. So that would be a third way of kind of unpacking those thought loops.
Mm-hmm. When I think about depression or anxiety, one thing that I think about is sometimes it's triggered by an event or a person or something that someone says. So is there anything around our triggers?
And we would just again come back to one of those three things, like maybe so-and-so says that we're not good at our job, and then we say, I'm not good at my job. So that's just a thought, and we're not our thoughts. So we can rise above that with higher consciousness, as an example. So, you know, there's always going to be things in our environment that push our buttons. And I think those are just great opportunities to hold up a mirror and say, okay, what can I learn? How can I grow? What's the lesson in all of this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I want to go back a little bit to the idea of sort of that, you know, how to form a good habit and however long it takes, whether it's 3 weeks or 3 months. But there's things called trigger goals, which are very valuable. And trigger goals are offensively small things that we agree to do on a consistent basis. And there's often a lead up to the actual goal itself. So for example, you've all either been here or you know someone who's been here. January 1st rolls around and so-and-so says they're going to go to the gym every day in 2018. That's their New Year's resolution, right? And so day one, they go to the gym and they totally rock it. And day two, they go and they rock it again. And day three, something comes up and they don't go. Maybe the dog's sick, or maybe little Billy had to go to the doctor, or maybe their car broke down. They don't go, and then they don't go, and then they don't go, and they don't go. So that's an example of taking that little deer trail. It's uncomfortable, so we find ways of kind of sabotaging that. So a trigger goal would look like, okay, maybe eventually the end goal is to go to the gym 4 or 5 days a week. So the first step would be to get dressed up in your exercise gear and not go anywhere. The second step would be to, the next day would be to get dressed up, and maybe you go and touch the back of your doorknob, but you don't leave the house. And then day three, you get dressed up, and maybe now you're actually gonna go sit in your car, but you don't drive anywhere. Day four, you get dressed up, and maybe now you're actually going to drive to the gym, but you don't go in. Day six, you get dressed up, and maybe now you're going to go into the gym, but you're just going to talk to a trainer. And then maybe by day seven, you actually go in and you maybe do a short workout. So as we set up these trigger goals, these very offensively small, I use the word offensively because, like, why am I just getting dressed up and sitting there? But what we're doing is navigating the nervous system's hate of change. Our bodies hate changing. And so this is a way of just kind of taking the back road around and changing anyways.
So that the nervous system can integrate and become accustomed to change.
Exactly. Oh, this isn't so bad, actually. Exactly.
Okay. Very interesting. That's the first time I've heard something like that spoken
about.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So coming back to the topic of mental health, wellness. Maybe if you could just summarize, you know, the single most important thread of this entire interview in terms of our thoughts and emotions and mental wellness.
Absolutely. And I think that the most important thing is to recognize that you're not your thoughts. You're the thinker of your thoughts, so you don't need to identify with a label. There's always a way of healing that, I believe.
what immense freedom I would imagine some people get when they realize they're not their thoughts.
Yeah, that's huge, right? That's huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you. It's been a delight. And let's hope that the people who are listening have an opportunity to put some of this into practice.
Yes, I agree. Commit to it, and then you'll get motivated to keep going.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Tonic Podcast, the podcast of Dr. Tanya Winchester, getting you healthy, happy, and doing what you love. The natural medicines and therapies mentioned in this podcast are not intended as medical advice or as a substitute for seeking medical attention. For any health concern, it's always best to make an appointment to see a licensed medical practitioner. For more articles and blog posts, visit Dr. Tanya, T-O-N-I-A, Winchester.com, or visit us in beautiful Nanaimo, BC at Tonic Naturopathic Clinic. Have a delightful day.